right, so this morning we discussed the Seder of Toldos. When we last met, Avram and Sarah didn't even have any children. And now this week, we're awaiting the birth of the grandchildren. Look at that. So Yitzhak and Rivka, together, are the parents of Yaakov and Esav. And with Yaakov and Esav starts a new dimension of world history, and particularly of Jewish history. Because if in the house of Avram there were two mothers giving birth to two completely different children who would go in different directions, now it's Yitzhak and Rivka who together have two sons, but those sons will diverge as well and go in different directions, completely opposite directions, in fact become antagonists now in our Sedra, growing up, even before, they even wrestled in the womb, and as they were raised, they were raised, and even then their different personalities and temperaments were markedly noticeable, and certainly as they got older. So Esav is Ish Yodeh Tzayid, Ish Sadeh, he's the hunter, the outdoorsman, the fieldsman, a little uncontrollable. And Yaakov is Ish Tom Yoshev Ohalim. He's the simple, perfected, spiritual person, the intellectual, Yoshev Ohalim, who dwells in tents. The heart of their divergence is, of course, focused on the brachos, which is really a little more than half the Sedra, beginning in Perek Chav Zayin. And the episode of the brachos is one of the most misunderstood in all of the Torah. Surface, the simple pshat is that Rivka favors Yaakov, and Yitzchak favors Esav, for reasons not really clarified in the Torah. And Yitzchak endeavors to give brachos, blessings, to Esav, and because Rivka favors Yaakov, she somehow sneaks a reluctant Yaakov in to receive the brachos from Esav. And that's what the Torah tells us, and that's the way the story is it brought down. But of course, that itself gives rise to many questions that we have to understand. For example, the first one we should understand is, what's the difference really? I mean, why does it make a difference who Yitzchak blesses? What exactly was he conveying to his sons? What was he giving them that they otherwise could not have? What is the bracha anyway? What is Yitzchak have some magical power to bestow something on another human being that other human beings do not have? So what was the necessity of Rivka even to sneak Yaakov in the way she did? Now, why don't you just talk to Yitzchak? They're already older people, right? They're close. Yaakov is, I think, now 63 years old. Yaakov and Esav, the twins, they're 63 years old. So they're not young boys. Certainly over the six decades of their lives, Yitzchak and Rivka would have noticed their different natures. And their different view of life, Hashgafas Olam, different. Certainly we noticed that. So why was it necessary to go about it in such a devious way? Why would Yitzchak want Esav to receive the brachos altogether? And if the brachos were given, so we know that Yaakov comes in, he disguises himself as Esav at his mother's suggestion, and he receives the brachos. Brachos we recite every Motzai Shabbos, as a matter of fact. V'yitan l'cho ha'lokim, God will grant you mitala shamayim u'mishmanei ha'aretz, from the dew of the heaven and from the fat of earth, yavrov dagon v'sirosh, an abundance of grain and wine. V'yavducha amim, the nations should worship you. V'yishtachavu l'cho le'umim, and people should bow down to you. Have a gvir la'achecha, you'll be a ruler over your brother. Yishtachavu l'cho b'nei imecha, and the children of your mother will bow down to you. Orecha arur umvarchecha baruch. Those who curse you will be cursed. Those who bless you will be blessed. So why would we have a lot to say? Why would Yitzhak want to give this bracha to Esau? And what is the essence of this bracha? It doesn't seem to be a very spiritual bracha in the least. And having given that bracha now to Yaakov, so comes Esau and is told by his father, your brother came. Literally means with deception, but Chazal understands b'mirmo b'chochma. The Medrash says b'chochmas Torah. So he came with the wisdom of Torah and took your brachos. So Esav says to Yaakov, to Yitzchak very plaintively, "Vayomar, halo atzalta li bracha? Have you reserved for me one bracha? Can you give me anything?" So Vayan Yitzchak, Vayomar l'Esav, Yitzchak says, "I can't. I gave him the bracha already." Hengvir samtiv loch v'eskolachov nasati loch. I made him the ruler over you, and all his brothers are given over to him. Their children will be given over to him to dominate. Nasati lo lavadim v'dagon v'sirosh smachtiv. I've bestowed upon him the grain, the wine, material blessings. Ulachayfo moaseh b'ni. What can I give you? I gave him the bracha I intended to give you. Vayomer Esav el Aviv. Esav says to his father, Havracha achasi l'chavi. Don't you have even one blessing for me? Borcheni gamani avi. Give me something, some bracha. It's almost heart rendering. In fact, Chazal note that Esav's cries here were sincere because he felt the pain of rejection. Vayisah Esav kalo vayev. He lifted his voice and cried because now he saw that he was really almost cut out of the family. Vayan Yitzchak Aviv Vayomer Elov. Yitzchak answers and says to him, "Okay, you want a bracha? Here's a bracha. Hinei mishemanei haaretz yemoshevecha. Your dwelling place will be the fat of the land. Umitala shemayim me'ol, and the dews of heaven above. V'al charbechot tichyeh v'sochicha tavod. You'll live by the sword and you'll serve your brother. But v'yok asher tarid. If your brother stumbles, uforakta ulo me'al tzavarecha, then you'll be able to throw off his yoke from around your neck, and you will dominate." Meaning, if Yaakov stumbles, you'll be in a superior position over him. So, Memanavshech, Esav comes and asks his father for a bracha, and Yitzchak says, "I don't have a bracha." So Esav then says, "You must have something." Borcheni gamani avi. So he gives him this bracha. So I say, did he have the bracha? Did he not have the bracha? If Yitzchak had this bracha, so why didn't he give it to Esav when he first came? He said, "I have a bracha for you." But he said, "No, I don't have a bracha for you." And then Esav pleaded, "Give me something." So he said, "I'll give you this bracha." Is it a bracha? Is it not a bracha? So if it was, why didn't he give it to him before? And if it's not, what is he giving to him now? So we have to understand exactly what went on. I mean, the story is not only a little more complicated than we studied as children, but in fact, it's a story like everything else in the Torah that affects us down to this very day and to this very moment. Because you have here the divergence of civilizations, two civilizations, one in which we live and carry forward, and the other which challenges us to this very day. So we have to understand first, what exactly are the brachos? What was Yitzchak seeking to convey, to transmit to his children? One thing which is clear is that the bracha itself is a bracha of materialism. Tala shemayim, mishmanei haaretz, economic supremacy, bless you, political supremacy, Ya'avducha mim, v'shachavu l'cho b'nei lumim, political supremacy, the great economic and spiritual and political power will be in the possession of the recipient of this bracha, as opposed to the bracha as we ordinarily think about it. What's the bracha that Yitzchak should want to convey, especially to Yaakov? It's the Birkas Avraham, the bracha of Torah, the bracha of Eretz Yisrael. So if you look at the end of the Sedra in Perek Chavches, Pasuk Dalet, when Yitzchak sends Yaakov away, and he blesses him, tells him, don't find a wife here like I did. You have to find a wife in my family, Padan Aram. God, the God of nature, will bless you and cause you to multiply and increase. You'll be an assembly of nations. God will give you the blessing of Avram to you and your descendants. Meaning Yitzchok knew, just like at the end of Chai Sarah, it says, Vayavarech Elokim es Yitzchok, God bless Yitzchok with the blessing of Avram. Meaning Yitzchok is chosen to be the follower of Avram, the Avram of two heirs, ostensibly. But to be the heir of Avram in terms of the bris, the covenant with God, that was God's choice, and it was Yitzchok. So too, the one who's going to be the heir to the bris Avram, to the birkas Avram, the blessing of Avram, that's always going to be God's choice. Just like he chose Avram, he chose Yitzchok, he chose Yaakov, he chose us as the Bnei Yisrael, the descendants of Yaakov. So who receives the bris Avram, the birkas Avram, that Yitzchok was not privy to? Yeah, he assumed it would be Yaakov, of course. Yaakov is Ishtam Yoshev Olam. Yaakov is not a hunter, he's not a wild man. Yaakov is the one who's naturally the heir of the Bris Avram. But Yitzchak has no say in that. That's God's choice. Who God wants to be his representative in the world, that's God's choice. We don't choose that. So Yitzchak said to Yaakov, very well, you'll go, God will bless you. God will give you whatever blessing he receives. So what then is the blessing that Yitzchak wanted to convey to his children? What's the notion of a blessing altogether? So I heard from my Rebbe, Rabbi Chait, and Chazal say this as well, that this blessing of Yitzchak to his sons, to one of his two sons, really, in a sense, duplicates what we have as Birkas Kohanim. Birkas Kohanim is not a bracha of the Kohanim. It's a bracha via the Kohanim to us, a bracha which comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yitzchak, whether it was B'Torah as Navi, as a prophet, or as a Mevarech, as the one who would designate some aspect of his children's lives, much like Yaakov did on his deathbed with his sons, was given the power to be the conduit of God's bracha of material wealth. That bracha was a bracha which is, in a sense, subordinate to the Birkas Avram, but naturally complements it. Meaning, we as Jews are given the Torah, but we're not given a Torah which isolates us from the world. We're essentially given a Torah which mandates that we consecrate the world, we sanctify the world. So we don't absent ourselves from real life. On the contrary, we immerse ourselves in real life with the goal, though, of sanctifying it, of making it holy. In other words, we don't eschew the physical, rather we seek to make it holy. And through our sanctification of the physical, that's how we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When God created the world and created man, there were essentially two aspects to life as it was given over to man. One was the physical and one was the spiritual. Both were necessary in order to civilize the world. So God's goal, we discussed this, I remember years ago, speaking about Noah, God's intention for mankind was really one. Mankind should be civilized and serve God. That's Yishuv Olam. Yishuv Olam means literally the settlement of the world, but in a practical sense, it means civilization. How is man civilized? So one way the Torah says, Pru urvu umilua sa'aretz b'chivshua. You'll multiply and you'll conquer the world b'chivshua. You'll master the world. You'll become the technological rulers of the world. You'll take nature and subdue it. And when man does that, and as generations went on, man did that. First, creating with God's help fire, and then as the Torah mentions in Bereishis, you had toolsmiths, you had metal workers, You had people who built cities, Hanoch, the son of Cain. You had people who invented the first instruments, built tents, etc. As man became more sophisticated, so he was able to indulge, advance that aspect of Yishuv Olam with which he was charged, B'chivshua, to master the world, to become civilized, to become essentially supreme in nature. But there's another aspect to Yishuv Olam, and of course that's the true ideas of God. The true ideas conveyed to Adam, conveyed to Meshuselah, to Noah, and eventually, which meant all of mankind, ostensibly, but as mankind could not grasp those ideas and became pagan, it was focused more on one family. And that was the family of Avram Avinu. That's the Bris Avram, that's the Birkas Avram. There'll be one nation, one family, really. Now we're a big family, but still one family, with all, you know, the problems that families have. One family given a certain way to live in a certain place. So one nation on earth who'll be bound to live in a certain locale, Eretz Yisrael. They'll receive the Torah, and this Torah will be the constitution of their existence, and they will be the repository of God's word, of God's truth throughout history. So that's the Birkas Avram. Now, Yitzhak is faced with the following dilemma. Does anyone really believe that for a moment Yitzhak thought that the Birkas Avram will be conveyed to Esau? How could that be? You see, Yaakov Avinu was naturally inclined towards the Birkas Avram. He's the natural successor to Avram Avinu. And you see from the beginning of the Seder, he's eating the lentils, Avram died, he's mourning Avram. You see, I mean, children are different, but this is a stunning difference. Yaakov Avinu is mourning the death of his grandfather Avram. The same day, Esav goes out and rapes and murders and worships idols. That's how he commemorates the death of his grandfather. So you see, completely different worldviews, natures, personalities, value system, they're in different worlds. So Yaakov, of course, would be the repository of the Bris Avram, of the Birkas Avram. There's no doubt about that. The question, though, becomes, as Yitzchak understood it, how does Esau fit into this picture? Granted, my father could send away my half-brother Yishmael, it's a different mother, she's not part of the Bris Avram. Ki be Yitzchak ikar l'chazara. But the question that Yitzchak faced, you know, we shouldn't ever think that Yitzchak was an old, doddering man who could not think clearly, and that's why he sought to bring in Esav. Yitzchak had a very clear plan. How do you keep Esav part of the fold? All right. And by the way, it's not that much different. We hope it's some difference. It's some difference, but not much different from what some parents go through. All right. Let's say you have a child who's not naturally inclined to sit and learn. Okay, so you have a number of choices. You could force him into a structure where he's going to fail, or make him sit in yeshiva, and he'll look for distractions, and he'll get turned off, and he'll turn off others. Or you could find some vehicle within the Torah system whereby he can excel. And this way, he's not shunted aside. He's not made to feel inferior to those who are sitting and learning, but he makes a very gainful, productive, and even indispensable contribution to Klal Yisrael. So that was Yitzchak's dilemma. How are we going to bring Esav, keep Esav in the fold in such a way that he's able to be part of the Birkas Avram, although in a subsidiary role? How are we going to do that? Yeah. The bracha have to be verbalized. Right. That was Ashgacha. In other words, Yitzchak was given an opportunity to determine what would be the aspirations of his family. Just like Avram's. Avram needed assistance. Avram had to be told, "Ki be Yitzchak ikar l'chazara." Yitzchak had a choice. He could construct a system. And this was part of the Nevuah. This was part of his role as an Av. He could construct a system whereby both sons will be part of the house of Avram and share in the bris, or only one son? To Yitzhak, it says, Vayev Yitzhak es Esav, Yitzhak b'fiv. Yitzhak saw in Esav really a nature contrary to his own. But and he saw Esav as a complement. Yitzhak was a more passive personality. Esav was not. He was a very active personality. So Yitzhak was naturally drawn to a son whose personality was different from his, and therefore he sought to exploit the talents that Esav had, and the gifts that the talents that Esav had. Esav was a bit of a ruffian. He was a hunter, with all that entails, a willingness to be devious, to be cunning, to steal, to kill, etc. Esav was a natural conqueror. Yaakov was not. Yaakov was the exact opposite. So in fact, this was Yitzhak's dilemma. How do you keep Esav part of the family when it's obvious that Yaakov receives the bris avraham? So Yitzhak devised this plan. So he knew he was giving the brachos to dispense. So he said the ideal situation is a partnership between Esav and Yaakov. Yaakov has the birkas avraham. But wouldn't it be wonderful? Isn't it ideal? Yaakov is not going to run out and conquer the world materially, technologically. He's Yoshev Olam. He's sitting in his tent. He's learning Torah. Yaakov is focused on being Makariv people to service of God. Yaakov needs to be supported as well. So he's the ideal partnership. Let Esav go out. And Esav is the one who'll have Mital HaShemayim. He'll have material wealth. He'll have political power. Esav's strength will be used in such a way to complement Yaakov. If Yaakov is Yoshev Olam, if Yaakov will be the primary recipient of the Birkas Avraham, so that Esav then serve as the protector of the Bris Avraham through supporting Yaakov materially and protecting him politically from the onslaughts of all of his enemies. Yitzhak's plan was a good plan. It's not a bad plan. Because otherwise, he as a father is forced to say, my eldest son Esav, he has no role to write him out of the family. Like my father wrote Yishmael out of the family. That he was not willing to do. So he thought the ideal would be to bring Esav into the fold, naturally in line with his personality and inclinations, and let him be subservient to Yaakov. Because of course, the possessor of the Birkas Avraham takes precedence. Let him be supportive of Yaakov in a subordinate way. That was his plan. Yes. Right. No. You see that? Yeah, because Esav was his son. It was natural son. Yeah, same mother. Yitzhak and Rivka, two sons. So the ideal would be a partnership. I mean, we have such a thing today. Yisachar Zvulun. That, here's Zvulun now. He's Yisachar and Zvulun together. See, that it would be a partnership. So it's perfect. Because one person can't do everything. Obviously, the person who's out there, in the office, in the factory, he can't sit and learn. He can't do two things simultaneously. So let Yaakov do what he's inclined to do. Esav do what he's inclined to do. That's perfect. This way you'll have God's plan fulfilled, Yishuv Olam, in both aspects, the material and the spiritual, in one family, the family of Avraham. Well, that's the downside. We'll see in a moment. That's a Rivka song. Yes. It's hard to say. It was the death that made him a Rasha, because you see, even Chazal said the famous Medrash, that while she was pregnant, he lunged to go to the base of Adizora. It means from his earliest youth, he was inclined towards instinctual gratification. He was a creature of the Yetzer Hara, all right? He did not have any, as we saw, we discussed last year, the Bechorah. The Bechorah, matters of the spirit, of Olam Abba, of mitzvos. They meant nothing to Esav. They didn't speak his language. So that's why he was able to trivialize the Bechora, because it didn't talk to him at all. It was worth more to Esav to eat some soup when he was hungry than the old Chai Olam Haba. He was not interested in that. So Yitzhak actually had a very good plan. Of course, there was one drawback to the plan, and the drawback was what Ofer pointed out, and that's what Rivka saw. Rivka had a different insight into Esav having grown up not in the family of Avram, but in the family of Lavan and Besuel. She was more adept, more perceptive in terms of seeing rishus in people. Yitzhak never saw rishus. It's very interesting, because I think Yitzhak's personality endures in our people today a lot more than we would think. The Jews generally have a very hard time seeing the bad in others. That's why we always ascribe good motivations even to our enemies, and we think, for that matter, that, you know, peace is around the corner, because I want peace. I have no claims against anyone. Why doesn't my enemy want peace? So we always see the good in other. I think it's because, you know, more or less, we're exposed in the Jewish world predominantly to goodness. We have some things not so good, but predominantly, I mean, Jews are good people, and the world recognizes, they hate us for it, but they do recognize it. And that really is Yitzhak's view of the world. Yitzhak could not see pure riches. What he saw in Esav is over-enthusiasm, tremendous energy that just needs to be channeled in the right direction. What's the channel? It's perfect. Let him become a supporter of Torah, become a supporter of Yaakov. He could be the gvir, he'll be the wealthy person, he'll be the tycoon, he'll be the political leader, he'll be the one who'll guarantee Yaakov's existence. So it's a very good plan. The plan only foundered because of one reason, and that is Rivka's perception of Esav. But she knew that Esav's nature was such, it wasn't just that he was rambunctious and difficult to control, but he was drawn to rishus. He was drawn to evil. It's not that he was indifferent to holiness. He was contemptuous of holiness. And therefore, Rivka sensed immediately that if Esav received the bracha of material prosperity and political dominance, he would use it not to supplement Yaakov, not to complement Yaakov, but he would use it to destroy Yaakov. He would make sure Yaakov was impoverished, and ultimately that Yaakov would fail. And that's what Rivka saw. Of course, the question is, we understand now why Yitzhak didn't see it, but why didn't Rivka take this directly to Yitzhak? Why didn't Rivka say, we have a problem. I mean, you want to give the bracha some, don't you realize Esav's nature? That Esav is going to use his powers that you give him to destroy Yaakov? Why didn't she say that? So I think the answer is, this was the whole ruse that Rivka devised, that Yitzhak had to see for his own, in his own way, the corruption that is inherent in the material. You can fake the spiritual. You can fake holiness, as Esav used to do, but you can't fake materialism. There's no such thing as a phony ascetic. You either are or you aren't. And nor is there such a thing as a person who is immersed in the world of the physical and doesn't own up. Those things are very hard to conceal. A person who's materialistic, it's obvious that he's materialistic. But a person who's spiritual, that's not so obvious, because you could have a guise of a spiritual. So what did Rivka show Yitzhak? He showed that just like Esav can come in the guise of the tzaddik to his father, so too Yaakov could come in the guise of the Rasha. And therefore, Yitzhak's own eyes would be open to the potential for an abuse of the brachos, as well as for the great danger that he was placing Klal Yisrael in. Listen to what happens. He would see Yaakov in a certain light, but he would see his eyes will be more open to Esav. All right? What really gives it away? Look at Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chavav will begin. Vayomer lov Yitzchak Aviv. So here, Yaakov comes, and he's wearing Esav's clothing, and Esav's clothing is rough, he's hairy. So Yaakov feels it, all right? Yeah, kol Yaakov, Yadayim de Esav, he's confused. The man speaks like a Yatama Chacham, but he's dressed like Esav. Gishono Eilai Ushkoli, he says, come close and kiss me. Bless you. Vayigash Vayishakol, so Yaakov comes near, and he kisses his father. Vayorach Esreach Bigado Vayavarchehu, he smells the fragrance of his clothing, and he blesses him. Vayomer, and he says, Re'e Reach Bini, Kireach Sodeh, Asher Bercho Hashem. He says, look, the fragrance of my son is like the fragrance of the field that God has blessed. What's the fragrance of the field? What does Chazal say? It's Kigan Eden. Gan Eden. Milrashi says, Milam, because he says, Halo Ein Reach Ra Yosem Misheta Foizim. There's no worse smell than goat skin. So that was what he was wearing, goat skin. Ela Milamet Shenichnas Himo Reach Gan Eden. When Yaakov entered, Yitzchak Avinu smelled the fragrance of Gan Eden. Okay? What does that mean? What does it mean? See, Eden was the first Beis HaMikdash. That was the intention. That Adam HaRishon be put in an environment where he would consecrate everything to God. So that was Gan Eden. Gan Eden, everything was holy. What did Yitzchak, when Yaakov walked in the garb of Esav, what did Yitzchak sense? He sensed it's a perfect fulfillment of his plan. Because here you have a person who's at home in the physical. He's been able to take the physical and consecrate it. Reach benika, reach sodeh, that's exactly what Yitzchak wants. Perfect. So now he said, you know what? My plan is working. Because now I have the vehicle by which we are going to fulfill God's plan for our people to have the master of the spiritual, the master of the physical as well. That's reach benika, reach sodeh. So now he sees, and right away he gives the bracha of material wealth to Yaakov. It's perfect. Vayehi kasher kilo Yitzchak levareches Yaakov. As soon as he finished, instant, Yaakov, the Medrash says, goes out one door, and Esav walks in the other door. Vayehi ach yatzo Yaakov es panei Yitzchak aviv. Esav comes, and he brings his food, and Yitzchak says, mi ota, who are you? Because the plan was already perfectly fulfilled. Reach benika reach sodeh, the master of the physical and the master of the spiritual, the same person. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayecharad Yitzchak charado gidolo ad meod. Yitzchak now trembles. Great trembling. Great trembling. Vayomer mi eifo hu atzotzayit. Whatever happened, someone else came. Vayove li, brought me food. Vochal mikol b'terem tovo v'avrachayu. He brought me everything I wanted before you came, and I blessed him. What's the charada? Rashi says here, the flip side of reach b'ni k'reach sodeh. What's the opposite of Gan Eden? Gehenom. Ro gehenom psucha mitachtov. He saw when Esav came in that there was something else here. It was not Gan Eden. There was not the consecration of the physical for the purpose of service of God, but something else. Gross physicality. That's it. It was the physical for the sake of the physical. It was just a materialistic person, a hunter, and right away he saw the natures of the sons clearly before him. That's the great charada, Gehenem psucha mitachtov. What he saw was that only Yaakov had the ability to consecrate the physical. I would it detract somewhat from his pursuit of the Birkas Avraham? There's no other choice. Can't be any other way. But Esav would only use the material for the sake of the material. And therefore, as Yitzchak says to his son, Gam Baruch, I blessed him already, so you should also be blessed in your own way. And now Esav says to his father, maybe something. He says from the first time, Yaakov cheated me, Now, for one time with the Bechoro, now a second time here, Halo atzalta li bracha, have you left a bracha for me? So Yitzchak says, no, I gave him a bracha. He's the gvir. He's the ruler. He's the tycoon. What do I have for you? And then Esav begs and he gives him another, he gives him a bracha that he named Shemayne Arts, he Moshe Vecha. So what's that bracha? What is that bracha? So my Rebbe explained as follows. The bracha that Esav was now receiving from his father, you see, there are only three potential brachas. Only two are fit. There's one bracha, the Birkas Avram. There's a second bracha, the bracha of materialism, which serves as a support for the Birkas Avram, as a complement to the Birkas Avram. So you have the spiritual, and then you have the material for the sake of the spiritual. What's the third potential bracha? A dubious bracha that? The material for the sake of the material, period. That is a painful bracha, because that bracha essentially says that person really has no share in the Birkas Avram. He's divorced from it. That bracha is only the bracha of wealth, of power, for its own sake, not for the sake of any productive purpose. So Yitzchak was loath to give that bracha to Esav. He said, Gam baruch yeh, maybe you'll be ancillary to Yaakov, both in terms of the spirit and in terms of the material. But Esav persisted. Obviously, again, you understand, Yitzchak was loath to give that bracha to Esav because it meant the ultimate distancing from the Birkas Avraham. She said, Gam baruch yeh, you should also be blessed as subordinate to Yaakov in both spheres. So Esav pleaded with his father and said he wants something for himself. And Yitzchak, only one possible approach to life that's left. Only one aspiration. It's an unfortunate one, but again, not one that's unknown today. People just seek money and power for its own purpose. That's it. And that's the bracha that Esav received, that Yitzchak gave Esav, with this caveat, that in fact, now you have these two systems in existence. Yaakov is the Birkas Avram, and who, as long as he's worthy, he's given the material and political resources to sustain and nurture and protect the Birkas Avram. But you, Esav, will receive the bracha in a separate system. Yishamane ha'aretz, bagan b'tirosh, power, yes, you'll be very powerful. You'll really be the master of the world. It's the B'nai Esav. B'nai Esav, really, you're Chazal Tetz Rome. In fact, the Medrash says, Mishmane Aretz, that's Italia, Italy. Because they became the seat of power, which ultimately conquered Yaakov, destroyed the base of Mikdash, when we were unworthy. So you'll have that. Power for its own sake. Money for the sake of money. That's what you'll have. With this caveat, Yaakov will dominate you, because the Birkas Avraham has to be supreme. But if Yaakov begins to betray his mission, his mandate from God, if he betrays it, then he will become inferior to you, and you will dominate him. And that really is the course of our history. That in fact, when we do stumble, and we become crass materialists, and we lose sight of our godly mission, so undoubtedly then Esav becomes superior to us, and we begin suffering. Yes? Right, it's not a bracha. Well, it's, yeah, you're correct. Well, notice, you're right, because it doesn't say Vayavarech, it says Vayan Yitzchak Aviv Vayomer. Vayan Vayomer, he answered and he said, because like I said, it's a dubious bracha. But what it is an acknowledgement of Esav's inclinations and giving him an alternative way in which he could be part of the family of Avram. What's the alternative way? No. The original, he should be a partner. He's not, now he won't be a partner, he'll be an antagonist. That's it. That's his share in the house of Avram. He'll be an antagonist to the Beis Yaakov. It is a klala, but it does give him a share in the world, correct?
My other point is,
In other words, he is the antithesis of Yaakov. That's right. That's right.
You
can't.
All you're going to be now is going to back job to Yaakov.
Not a backdrop, I would say more a bulwark or an obstacle against Yaakov's complete failure. But if Yaakov abandons the mission of Yaakov, then it's not as if we can disappear. We can't. Jews can't disappear. You know, don't tell to the world, but we can't, because that's God's promise to us. But we can reach such a lowly state that the enemy comes and clocks us, reminds us of our mission. That Esav is the rod. Exactly. It's a shevet ever so, the Navi says. Esav is the rod of God's wrath against Yaakov. So it means he has a share in the house of Avram, but not in a direct contributory sense, not as a partner, but really as an antagonist, as the one almost as an ombudsman, the critic, the ones like the bumpers at the side of the road that keeps Yaakov on the derech. He's the one who knocks us back onto the derech. That's correct. That's his role. That is his role. So it's not a bracha necessarily. But Esav wanted some share in the house of Avram. See, he plays a very important role. You see, Chazal never denied Nebuchadnezzar, for example, Rome. They're Shlichei Hashem, agents of God. All right? It's not as our antithesis. It's a role that Yitzchak, again, was very chagrined to have had to offer his son. Very chagrined by it. But yet it was the only way that Esav remains even an ancillary part of the family of Avram. Yes?
You just said a couple years ago.
A couple of years ago?
She remembers.
You're not supposed to prepare or remember.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
So is this almost condemning Esav's family to being like this, in the sense that what if in the future they could become better and they could use their materialism to support Torah, but because he is stating this now, he has no chance of ever becoming better?
That's a good question. I would think not. I would think Esav has that chance to be supportive of Yaakov. And you see
that's
certain times in history, for example, at the beginning of our Sedra this week, it says, Shnei Goyim Bivitneich. So the Medrash there, Rashi quotes it, I think. It says, Shnei Goyim Bivitneich. It's like Antoninus and Rebbe. Mark Antony, the emperor of Rome, was very close with Rebbe. So there you had actually a symbiotic relationship between Esav and Yaakov that Yitzchak envisioned. That you have Rome, and the power of Rome essentially harnessed in support of Torah Yisrael, Rav Yehuda Anasi. So you had, what's that? No. It's because it could exist, but not for Esau. As a matter of fact, Chazal say, those who say it was a prophecy of the future, I guess I said it a few years ago, because you see, in their lifetimes, Yaakov never became dominant over Esau. On the contrary, he was always subservient to Esau. So it's a projection into the future. But it could happen. Doesn't mean it has to happen. And the way of history is such that the Bnei Esav have been leaders in furthering civilization, advancing technology. I mean, what's the center of world civilization, really, as Western man looks at it? European civilization. You know, now the multiculturals they had their moment in the sun, but you can't make any claim that, say, the culture of Africa or Asia is in any sense superior to the culture of Europe. You can say it, but that's not realistic in terms of literature, arts, etc. So the culture of Europe really was further. That's the Bnei Esav. Those are the Bnei Esav. But we know also the downside, and that is the culture of Europe, with all the sophistication, rife with the hatred of Jews. Down to this day, hatred of Bnei Yaakov. Historically, to this very moment as we speak. All right. That's right. It's not going to change, but you do have some of the Bnei Esav convert, and they do come, and they're part of the family of Yaakov, but as a historical force, all right, Ad asher avo el Adoni Seiro, we read in Vayishach in 2 weeks, Yaakov says, until Bias Mashiach ve'alu Moshim b'hartzim l'shpotis ha'reisov v'yisol Hashem amluchom. He said it's pasuk every day, pasuk from Ovadia. That day when there'll be the ultimate reunification, when in fact Esav accepts Yaakov as his superior, that has to wait the Masa Mashiach. So what Esav is projected as here is as a historical force that is going to counter Yaakov throughout the generations as that obstacle to Yaakov's stumbling. There's an important point that Rav Avinir makes, which I think really rounds it out, because clearly then the bracha of Ruchnius for the sake of Ruchnius is Yaakov's, that's the Birkas Avram. But Yaakov is given, as we know historically, he's given the ability to access tremendous material wealth as well as political power in support of the Ruchnius of Yaakov. And that's why when we are successful, Malchus David, Malchus Shlomo, Yoshio, a certain time, very brief time in the second base of Mikdash, we're able to utilize both aspects. Esav is Gashmius for the sake of Gashmius. Now the bracha of material wealth, I said a few years ago, I think it was on the Shabbos morning, you see the bracha of Yishuvom is given to the Jewish people. That even when we're not the leaders in Ruchnius, Rachmona Litzlan, we're still leaders in civilization. Hence, the disproportionate number of Nobel Prizes awarded to Jews. Hence, the disproportionate contributions of Jews to science, to technology, to the arts. Ad hayom, until today, no different. I mean, it should be something that we just gasp in astonishment that Jews are so disproportionately represented in... among those who are advancers of civilization in the world. It's an astonishing thing. That's part of the Birkas Hashem also. That's part of the Birkas Yitzchak of Tal Shem Mishmane Haaretz. That is the bracha. But that bracha is abused. Has the bracha abused? So Rav Avinir made a very, very strong point that we should ponder. He said the best thing is if Yaakov sticks to Ruchnius, supported by the bracha of Yitzchak